time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now, here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hey guys, welcome to episode number 15 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I am your host, Alyssa Barnes. Before I introduce today's guest, I just have a couple of really quick announcements regarding the National Finals Rodeo. As many of you are probably aware, it kicks off with the very first performance of 2014 on Thursday, December 4th, and it runs through Saturday, December 13th. Now, I am going to be in Las Vegas December 4th through the 7th, and if any of you are going to be there as well, I would love to meet you. Just to make it easy on any of you who would like to come say hello, I will be at the NFR Fan Fest at the Las Vegas Convention Center, and that's right where Cowboy Christmas is. I'll be there Friday, December 5th during the Wild Pony Race, which is at 2:15, Friday, December 5th. You can find a complete schedule of events for the NFR Fan Fest at nfrexperience.com. So if you happen to be in Vegas that first weekend on Friday, December 5th, and you're shopping at Cowboy Christmas or checking out the RMEF Hunters Christmas, come by and say hello. I'll have some Earn Your Spurs auto stickers on hand. I just love the opportunity to meet my listeners. And so if you're going to be in Vegas, definitely come by and say hello. Now, if you're going to be in Las Vegas, but not on that particular day, and you still want to get an Earn Your Spurs sticker, they will once again be available at the University of Las Vegas table at the Thomas and Mack on the concourse and also at Cowboy Christmas. Look for the college kids in the University of Las Vegas jackets and say hello to my brother Bryce. Now on to today's guest. Kelly Timberman is the executive director of production for the Professional Rough Stock series. He is also a seven-time NFR qualifier in the bareback riding for the PRCA and also a world champion bareback rider. But unlike a lot of professional rough stock riders and a lot of professional rodeo cowboys, he didn't grow up going through the ranks of junior rodeo and high school rodeo. In fact, even though his dad was a very successful rodeo cowboy, he didn't want his kids rodeoing. So Kelly didn't even get started until he was in college. So today we'll talk about how hard work really fueled Kelly's success. And then we'll talk a little bit about the Professional Rough Stock series and how they are changing the face of rough stock and rodeo in general. Kelly even throws in a little advice on raising kids and teaching them a strong work ethic. So it's really great stuff. Without further ado, here's Kelly Timberman.
Well, thank you for being on the show today, Kelly. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Not a problem. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, just having a few technical difficulties, but that's okay. So I'd love for you to start off and just tell us how you got started in rodeo. From what I understand, it was kind of a little bit different than a lot of the professional rodeo cowboys out there. So I'd love to just kind of start off by hearing your story.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is my dad rodeoed from high school all the way through professional ranks. He did every single event in rodeo and was a really good bareback rider. Ended up 16th in the world one year. And I mean, you know, it was funny because my whole adolescence was chasing my dad around in the rodeo arena at the house, you know, practice. We had a big indoor arena and then going to rodeos. So I fell in love with it. But when it came to time for us boys to start rodeoing, my parents wouldn't have any part of it. They didn't want us to follow that road. And that was pretty tough because I grew up around it. You know, I was roping. We started team roping, me and my brother. I was 7 and he is 10. And, we just were always around that setting. And then to be told that, no, you know, we want you to do something better. We thought, you know, that's as good as it gets, you know, really. I still feel that way today, but you know, there's a lot of things that go into play with that. Because my parents didn't allow me to rodeo, through high school, I had a huge desire to be a rodeo cowboy. So every time I went to a rodeo really meant something to me. But on top of that, what I learned through my scholastics, what I learned through, you know, being a part of wrestling and football, that team, that work ethic, you know, how to set goals and build towards a common goal. And, you know, that was invaluable. I could not replace that. And that's the reason that I've had success in rodeos, because of all those different avenues. So, you know, it's funny, when I actually left the day after high school and went to Colorado and was doing an apprenticeship at a cutting horse trainer there, and had met some buddies that were in rodeo, and I got to hanging out with them quite a bit, and they knew a little bit about my dad and his background. And Bruce Ford was 30 miles away and one of my heroes, and they were going over to get on one day, and they just asked me, said, "Hey, would you like to come with us and get on?" And I said, "I'd love to, but I don't have I don't have anything, and I don't know what to do." And they said, "Well, we'll give you a real quick school, and we'll just go get on." I said, "All right." So in the middle of this huge parking lot, that their dad owned a big trucking company, so I had this gravel parking lot. They grabbed a heel horse, brought her out, and they showed me where to pull the rig and how to set it and stuff on the horse. Gave me a glove, showed me how to run my hand in the rigging, and then they put me up there and showed me how to mark her out, and that was it. And then we went and got on. And it's funny because those guys have been doing it for quite a while, and my first horse I rode better than they did. So it was just something that was very natural for me. Wow. And a lot of it, though, was I rode a horse every single day. And every cowboy that you see going to the national finals or at that elite level, the guys in rough stock, even in the bull riding, that are very hard to beat, or that, you know, top five, top three in the world every year, are guys that are horseback almost every single day, or at least during the week. And that's a huge part of it. So I, you know, a lot of my success comes through just being a horseman too. But
yeah, I'm sure that's true. I remember talking to, I think it was Cody Martin one time, and he told me that when he started riding Bronx, that he had never ridden a saddle horse before. And the scariest part for him was having to do a victory lap after the rodeo. And I just thought, wow, that's amazing. Somebody getting involved in rodeo that's never ridden a horse, really. But I would think that that is so invaluable to have those basic horsemanship skills before you ever get on one that really bucks.
Sure. But you look at it too this way, is rodeo is a sport. And these guys are athletes, you know, before anything, they're athletes. You know, it does help to have that common bond with the animals and understand, you know, their behaviors, things like that. But it's not a necessity by any means. And there's a lot of guys out there that ride bulls that aren't cowboys, that couldn't ride a horse for a victory lap, you know. And
that's a fun thing to look at in rodeo is, you know, any athlete can be a part of it. Doesn't matter how big, how tall, how small, how slow, how fast. It doesn't matter. If you have a desire to be a rodeo guy, you can, there's a spot in there for you somewhere. And I love that about it. But, you know, going back to the story about riding, when we were at Bruce Ford's place, I got on three horses and I rode all three. And on my last horse, Bruce came up to me and said, he said, "Are you ready to get bucked off?" And I said, "Man, I'm not getting bucked off." He said, "Well, if you get bucked off, you owe me a dollar." And I got on the horse and I rode him as, you know, best I could think of how to do it, you know. And he hollered at me to get off, and I got off and walked back to the chutes, and he paid me my first dollar bill. And that was just so cool, you know?
Yeah.
And I was hooked ever since then. And I didn't get a chance to really rodeo or go to a school after that. And there's a lot involved. I had my son when I was a junior in high school. So I was actually married through my senior year of high school. And then my daughter came shortly after that. So I was a working man. I couldn't afford to pay for a rigging or go to a school and to really learn. So the way that I got into it was a little bit different. I followed my older brother, matter of fact, and he went to a Marvin Garrett school and Larry Sandvik and Mark Gomes school there in KC, which is just down the road. And I just went to it and watched and learned. And me and my brother started going down the road. And the cool thing, you know, this is what's so cool about rodeo, is the heart that comes into it from a lot of guys, from a lot of aspects. But for me and my brother, we grew up pretty, you know, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so we earned everything that we had that work ethic and that desire to be the very best we could, and accountability and all those things that what makes cowboys special, right? And the coolest part about starting out was me and my brother learned together, but we were using the same equipment. The only thing that we had different was I had a different glove because my hand was a little bit bigger, and he had a different glove, but we shared the same rigging at every rodeo that we went to when we first started out.
Wow.
They'd either buck him first or me first, and then the other one that wasn't up would be hanging out by the stripping chute to grab our rigging so we could get back and get it pulled down before we had them on our head. But it's just great times. You know, you think about just great times, good memories. And, you know, from there, we went to a few rodeos, and I ended up, Tom Parker had seen me there at Casper College as a rodeo coach. And this was a good year after I had got on my first horse at Bruce's place. And I hadn't been able to get on since then. And the only way that I really got to practice was going to some amateur rodeos there in Wyoming. And Tom Parker had seen me have a little bit of success and thought that there was something that maybe I could give back to the Casper College and get an education at the same time. And he confronted me about it, and I took him up on it, and was probably one of the most monumental decisions I've ever made, because I was able to utilize rodeo to get an education. But at the same time, when I went in to that, I knew exactly where I was wanting to go with rodeo. So I took full advantage of that. And, you know, I'm sure Tom would attest to it, and probably a lot of my teachers, that I worked my tail off. You know, I had the two kids every other day, because I'd went through a divorce. So I had the two kids every other day during the week, and then every other weekend. I rodeoed full time for Casper College. I took double time for classes. So most kids are, I think, 14 hours is you know, you're full up on eligibility. You can still rodeo. I took 20 to 24 credit hours, because when I went to college, I went so late that I had 2 years of eligibility. That was it. That was paid for. And I knew that I had to really take advantage of those 2 years and get all the schooling I could get in. So then once I got out of that, I could go ahead and pursue my career. And that's really what it was, is I full-time job. I worked for Anchor Drilling. I was a shop hand and unloaded semis and trucks by hand or with forklift, and just put everything I had into it for 2 years, at the same time really building my career. And my first year of college, I ended up going in the CNFR first in the nation that year. I was ahead of everybody by a couple, 200 or 300 points, I think. And that was monumental for myself, because it showed that work ethic and everything was paying off. And I didn't look at rodeo like a lot of guys did, because I'd never high school rodeoed. I had never gone to any other rodeo. So I instilled that same work ethic that I would in like wrestling or football. Going to the gym, watching film, setting goals, daily method of operation, all these things to build my success ratio up. And I turned this into a business plan. And, you know, Pete, you know, there's no luck into anything if you work your tail off for it, you know, and it's earned, it's appreciated, and it's probably the best feeling in the world. But I couldn't waste my time. I couldn't waste my time, because if I was on the road, I was taken away from those kids. And if I was doing that and not doing what was right on the road, then that's just, you know, that's not the way a guy's supposed to be made. So I put everything into it, so I didn't take away from those kids, and actually built a career that benefited my life and theirs at the same time. So
that is awesome. I love what you said about how you got to where you, the height of your career, I should say, with hard work. Because you weren't schooled from the time you were a kid on how to ride bareback horses. I mean, yes, you were a cowboy and you rode horses and you obviously, you know, had that background. But as far as your rodeo career, I mean, you worked your tail off. And that is, I think that's so inspiring for people who don't have that background maybe, and they really want to do something and they haven't had the opportunity. I mean, that just goes to show you that if you really work hard at something, you can accomplish it. And I think that's awesome. It's a really good lesson.
It is. And it's all belief within yourself. Here's the thing. When I had my kid, right before I went to college, there was about 2 or 3 years in between there where I was working some of the most difficult, excruciating, gut-wrenching jobs you could ever imagine having, just miserable in life, period. And, you know, we'll say one of them, right before I went to college, I had a job as a swamper for a trucking company. What I did is I literally unloaded semis out in the middle of nowhere by hand into these van trailers for these oil rigs. And it was, you know, chemical 100-pound bags. I can tell you exactly how many bags. It was 14 pounds, 35 bags to a pallet. And then on top of that, you know, if you weren't overweight, you'd throw on some chemical and unload that too. And you know, it was a job to where I worked 19-hour days, and the more work I put in, the more loads I could get in a day to make ends meet. So I was doing two loads a day with, you know, semis, and then I was a hot shotter on call at night. So there was nights where I'd get 2 or 3 hours of sleep, and I'd go out and I'd unload a flatbed trailer by hand out there. And I did that for a full year. And once I got into rodeo and I got the opportunity to go to college, I decided right then and there, if I put a quarter of that effort into this job that I've been doing full time into my rodeo career, I'm going to be successful. But if I put that same amount into my rodeo career, I'm going to blow the roof off. So that's what I did. And my career from college started in 98, 99, 99, 2000. I bought my permit late in that 2000 season, and it took me a full year to fill it. It took me until 2002 to be able to buy my PRCA card, and I went full-time that 2002 year. Ended up 21st in the world that year. 2003, I ended up 22nd, and then I won the world in 2004.
Wow.
Now there's a there's a big transition in there for me, and I'll tell you why. In 2002, 2003, I got that star status where I was really somebody, right? Well, then I started going out to the bars. I started hanging out with the world champs, and you know, everybody wanted to buy me a beer and do all these things, and it was just, you know, a great time. I thought, man, this is where it's at, and this is what I want to be. And because I really looked up to a lot of these guys that were going. And I remember one, and this is the turning point for myself at Pendleton. I'd been on the road for about a month, and I hadn't called home, I guess. I don't know. You know, I was partying and just not taking advantage of my situation. And I was making the finals that year. I was sitting like 12th or 13th and really thought I had it won. And my daughter called me up. And my daughter's had a lot of big transitions in my life, and we'll talk about those in a sec, but this is the first one. And she came in and was crying, you know, on the phone. And I said, Day, her name's Day. And I said, Day, what's the matter? And she just said, Dad, when you coming home? And I'd realized that I'd been on the road and I'd been partying and drinking beer and doing all these things I took away from that child's life. I'd been taking my time away from her money to pay bills, all these things, and just being no nonsense on the road, which was bull. And that hit me in the gut so hard that I quit that year. I went straight home after Pendleton, didn't go to another rodeo that season, and I could have made the finals. But
wow.
I wasn't pursuing my career the way that I always told myself I would. I let that little speck of stardom get me. And it was turning me into something I didn't like about myself. So I went home and I worked for a guy building barbed wire fence for about a month, clipping barbed wire. You know, we did 5 strands a mile a day. And you talk about build your forearms up. But anytime that you want to go back to winning, go home and find the hardest job you can get. When you get back on the road, you're going to want to win. But that was it. It turned my whole perspective on the quality of what I was putting out there. And I never took advantage of that again. And before I ever started the season again in December of 2003, I wrote a goal down, and my number one goal was to win the world in 2004. And I still have this piece of paper because I put them everywhere in my house, on my front door, in my kitchen, my, kitchen counters, on my fridge, mirror, everywhere. I had my friends came over and laughed at me. They teased me. You've never been to the finals. How do you expect to win the world? You know, my parents, you know, scoffed at me and chuckled a little bit, and my brothers and everybody, but kind of looked at that because that's a huge, lofty goal. But I believed it in my heart that if I put the effort into it, that I believed I could, that I'd attain it. And, you know, you talk about a monumental change. You talk about the work that went into that every single day. You know, we'd get on the road. I have buddies that I traveled with that loved to go out and drink beer and do things. And I'd stay home and sleep. I'd get up in the morning, go run. If there's a place to practice on the road, I'd go get on practice horses. If there was a college kid, a bunch of them had a spur board, I'd go get on the spur board, you know, somewhere. I pushed that level of trying to achieve that goal to the max. And, you know, and that was the main turning point for me, was just understanding from my daughter that, you know, what I was doing wasn't what it was to be a professional in any aspect, whether it was rodeo or businessman, it didn't matter. And it changed my life. You know, it really did. And, you know, aside from that, your kids look up to you. So you got a little bit of extra incentive with anything that you do when you have children, because you want them to see in their eyes the very best, you know? And so, yeah, it's kind of, that was a pretty gut wrenching time for me, but in the long run turned out to be probably one of the biggest blessings.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. And you're so fortunate that you learned that lesson pretty easily. It didn't take you, you know, it didn't take you years.
It wasn't easy, I promise. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. It takes a lot for a guy to suck his pride up, I promise. You know, but it's funny because my career was, you know, I was just talking with Cody Lambert this last weekend, and he's like, you know, he said, I was looking at your career. He's like, you were here and then you're on, and then all of a sudden you're gone. And I said, well, there's some factors to that. I said, you know, the reason that I retired from rodeo was I got, my daughter wanted to come live with me. I got a chance to have full custody of her and follow her through her high school years. And I jumped on it. I quit rodeo cold turkey. And I'd never replaced that chance in my life. And it was tough for a little while, because you go from being at a very high level in rodeo to nothing. It's hard on the pocketbook, for one, because rodeo cowboys, there's nobody behind you setting you up for the future. And you've got to do that yourself, but it's so expensive to go down the road, and rodeo is so unfair. You never know when your next check's going to be. You never know how much money you can never justify any of your expenses. And the judging with PRCA is so up and down and around. You never know where you're going to, if you're going to get judged fair, if you're not, and you try to be the very best that you can at athletic, you know, athletically. If you don't draw a good horse, you've got all those expenses going down there. And then if you, you know, ride good and your horse doesn't buck, you're out of money. So do you stay home, pay the fees? I mean, it's just this whirlwind of difficulty. And so coming off of that, we didn't have a lot to set back on. And, you know, there's a lot of lesson there too, sucking up your pride and having to go back to work when you're in the top three every year for 7 years. That's a tough situation, you know, and, but it's, you look at it in a couple of ways. Is you just appreciate everything that you've had so much more. And then for me, and this is something we talked about, the PRS is getting into an association where it is going to benefit the cowboys. You know, it is for the cowboys and building them up for their future. I feel very strongly about that, because, you know, I see what's going on now and what has been going on for years, and why, you know, golf is making more money than these guys that are risking life and limb, riding with broken bones just to put food on the table. I can't understand that. And it's, you know, it's just an association downfall, to where, you know, now we have an opportunity to step up and really build something for these guys. And that's important, because other, you've got the PBR, you've got the barrel racers, they've set something up. You've got the team rope and USTRC, and now the calf ropers have stepped out and started to really do something. So who's going to take care of the bareback and the bronc riders? Mm-hmm. Nobody really, you know? And so it's about time somebody stepped up and did something, you know, for the betterment of that sport.
Well, that's a good segue into talking about the PRS, because mm-hmm. there's probably some people out there who maybe aren't yet familiar with the organization. So maybe you can just tell us a little bit about PRS and what your involvement is and sort of the goals of the association.
Sure. The PRS is the Professional Rough Stock Series, and that's exactly what it is. It's rough stock. It's bulls, barebacks, and broncs. And we're on national television, RFT-TV, every Wednesday and Sunday. And that's a great partnership. But really coming into it, the reason that I'm associated with the PRS to begin with is their mission statement is this. They want to increase the livelihood of the cowboys that are involved, the rodeo athletes, and the people that are producing the animals that bring them to these events. And to me, it does not get more wholesome than that, because that's why I want to be a part of this. And they literally hired me on about 6 months ago to be the executive director of production. So I do all the live event. I hand select all the livestock that comes to the events. I choose the picket man. I do all the cowboy relations, shoot help, the sound, the pyro, everything. My announcer, the whole nine yards. And the thing that's really neat about what we've done with the PRS is we're looking at avenues to improve rough stock. One of the biggest avenues that needed improved was the judging criteria. And the reason being is because it's outdated. The last time that is ever revised or anything was in the 1960s, literally.
Wow.
1960s.
Wow.
And you cannot tell me that the quality of stock hasn't gotten more consistent and the spurring ability hasn't gotten better. But I mean, it has. Everything across the board has developed and grown except for that criteria. So we've redone that. We've made it very explicit. It's simple to follow. And on top of that, it's fair. You know, you're going to know cut and dry who the best rider is and why. And that's something that you miss out on professional rodeo now, because even I, as a competitor, as a world champ, you know, couple-time average winner of the finals, seven-time qualifier, I don't know how they're judging sometimes. And mm-hmm. that, how can you get fans engaged? You know, and then on top of that, it's supposed to be set up as a sport where the best athlete, the guy that has the most athleticism, that works the hardest, that really goes out there and strives to be the very best, should be the guy that's winning, you know? And that's not how it is nowadays. You got a lot of great athletes out there that might not even get a chance. And I don't understand why. And I don't want to get into that because I just don't get it. And it's unfair. It's unfair. And I see that a lot of competitors see it. And that's the reason for this major change. So what we did is we looked at, you know, coming into this, we got a group of our peers from Lyle Sankey to Mickey Young to you name it, and brought those guys in. Then we got younger guys in, and we said, okay, you know, what's the reason for the change and why? And so we looked at this different scenario. Then we justified our point system off of the greatest sporting event in the world, and that's the Olympic Games. And what we did is we looked at, okay, if this is the way that it's supposed to be set up, this is as fair and as cut and dry as it gets, then we need to follow suit here. So we've set ours up to follow suit with what they're doing. And it's very simple. It's, you know, the criteria is very easy to follow. So even the fans will know exactly how the rides are being judged, which is very important. But on top of that, the Cowboys are going to know. So when they look back at it, they can look at the sheets and say, okay, I need to work on my start. I need to work on my drag or my exposure. Or, you know what I mean? So it's going to propel our athleticism to a completely different level, that's why we revamp stuff and improve. And then same thing with the quality of the animals. You know, the PBR has got it locked down when it comes to bull riding. There's no way that we'd ever want to compete in the bull riding. That is not it. But in the horse events, we'd like to follow suit. We want our horses to be that rank, you know, that almost unrideable. It's just unbelievable what the bull riding has done. So that gives us incentive to do the same thing. So in our judging criteria with that, what we've done is we've looked into the PBR, but then also we looked at the greatest, you know, equine judged events in the world and justified our criteria off of that, like the cutting horse industry, reining, you know, any type of show. We've got into that when it deals with athleticism. The reason being is because we want our criteria to be explicit. We want the fans to understand what they're seeing in the animals. We want our producers to understand what we want to see in our animals, and we want our consumers to understand what they're purchasing. So that's a big deal for the consistency and the quality of the livestock that we portray and bring to our events. That hasn't been done in those two events. It's been done in the bull riding. It has not been done in the horse event. So there's some major reasonings into why we've revamped the judging criteria, but the biggest one is the fairness issue, the equality. It doesn't matter who you are, who your daddy is, where you come from. If you're one of the best riders in the world, you're going to win, you know, and that showed at the American, because we are the sanctioning body for the qualifying events for the American. That's the richest one day rodeo in the world. Jerry Jones, Dallas Stadium matched up with RFD TV. And through one of those qualifying events, Richmond Champion, a young guy still in college, has never made the finals before, qualified for the American and won $1 million. The first $1 million winner ever in the bareback riding. And that just shows that what we're putting out there is quality, and it is fair. And it's what everybody wants to see, you know, especially in rodeo. And it is, I mean, there is some change, and it is hard for guys to come out of the box and not look at what traditional rodeo has done. And that is going to be hard, especially for guys that have been world-class level, you know, back in the day, we'll say, or even now, some of them still have a problem with it. That's okay. We're not going to make everybody happy. But the thing is when you sit down and you're able to give yourself a chance to listen and look into what we're doing. Hey, you know, give us some criticism. You know, I can always take any type of criticism because I know it's just going to make us better. And in the ins and outs that we haven't looked at. So that's great. But really our overall goal is to increase the quality for all those cowboys and people that are involved, whether it's a contestant or a fan watching it, because that's what we adhere to. We adhere to that professionalism, the quality that everybody wants to see, the best of the best on the best of the best. And that's important to me. But when you do that, it's got to be cut and dry who first, second, third, and fourth is. You know, if we're paying those placings, it's got to be cut and dry. You know, I don't want any cowboy come to one of our events and winning third or second and knowing in his heart when he left there that he should have had first. That's a horrible feeling, and I've dealt with it a lot. I know a lot of cowboys going down the road have dealt with it. Or, no, you should have been first and not even got a check. That happens a lot, too. And so that's something that we've remedied, and you know, it's exciting for me because it shows that we are definitely on path to making something great, simply great.
Yeah, that's amazing. I did not know that, and to me, I grew up showing cutting horses, and so I'm picturing like a judge's sheet for the cutting where, you know, everything is scored either plus or minus, and that's how you get the score. So it's not based on just, okay, well, this is what I think the score should be for the horse and the rider. It's like, well, this is it because this is what they did wrong, or this is how they added to their ride. And so that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, and you know, on top of that, looking at that, you say plus and minus. Now, what we've done on here is we're able to award a few points back to the animal and back to the rider. And the reason being is because level of difficulty.
Right. You know?
And to be honest, as a bareback rider, if you're a PRCA guy going down the road and you draw hoppers all year, you're going to probably be going into the top two or three spots going into the national finals because they'll let you win on a hopper. But you go get on the bucker, the hard to ride, the one that's, you know, going to be a 24 point horse or should be, and you ride him good, they're going to mark the horse an 18 because he's not as flashy, because they don't know the quality. They can't understand the dynamics of the horse and how they buck and, you know, the overall power and all that issue. So you're going to go get on the horse that takes 10 times more to ride. It takes 10 times more athleticism to get it through, and you're not going to win a dime, not going to win a dime. And the thing is a lot of fans want to see that horse. Did you know the two highest sold tickets at the finals are the eliminator round and the finals round?
Not surprised.
Why is that? No, that's what but that's what the PBR brings to the table. They bring the rankest bulls in the world matched up with the best bull riders in the world. I mean, that's a show. That's a sale. Well, we want to do the same thing. And I'm not talking about eliminators. I'm talking about horses that are in front of the chutes and dirty buck, and a guy's going to probably stub his toe on. You know, he's not going to ride him flawlessly. Well, in the PRCA, they're not going to reward you for that ride. They're going to cut your throat, and you're not going to place. Well, with us, you're going to have a chance to not only place, but probably win the rodeo because we understand the level of difficulty. And a nice thing about that, too, to be a judge with the PRS, you've had to have a prolific career in rough stock. Not in tiny events or in rough stock, and especially in the horse events. A lot of bull riders are cowboys and can judge horses, but not very many. You know, not very many of them out there can do it. But horse guys can judge bulls. You know, so like at the event in Rapid City here, I've got Mark Garrett in the bareback riding, you know, world champion bareback rider going to come in, and legendary Garrett family. And he's going to judge one side, and then Red Limmel is going to judge the other side, a guy that's made the finals in bronc ride, I don't know how many times. Team Roper, too, was the saddle bronc director of the year forever. You know, so that's the caliber that we're bringing because these guys understand what livestock is. And that right there exemplifies what we're talking about, quality and fairness. You know, let's get it right the first time. And you know, I don't want to take away from rodeo because I love rodeo. I love every aspect about it, but there's things that need to be changed. Things that need to be redone, and they're not being redone, and that's not fair to our contestants. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, hopefully they'll follow suit and look at this because there's always going to be a place for rodeo, you know. But when it comes to making sure that these guys are taken care of, they're definitely not doing that, and it's about time that we stepped up and done that, you know. And it's going to wrinkle some feathers. I know it is, especially because I you know, did so well in rodeo and have gotten a career out of it because of, you know, rodeo. So I understand that. But at the same time, you know, my passion for fairness and equality and making rodeo what it's supposed to be, I'm going to be all for that no matter what. And, you know, I'll still watch the National Finals Rodeo. I'll still go and, you know, talk with my buddies down there and always be a part of it in some way if I can. But the overall scheme of things is this. I want to make sure that these guys are taken care of because I was one of them, and it's well deserved.
Yeah, well, that's I love that philosophy. And what I really love and I want to talk about a little bit is sort of the accessibility it seems like you guys are creating for people to get involved in the sport. And, you know, my whole goal is to help people get involved in the Western lifestyle in whatever capacity.
Sure.
You know, they want to, whether it's rodeo or just riding or, you know, whatever. And I love that it seems like PRS is really wanting to for more people to get involved and making it fair, like you said. And, you know, you don't have to have a dad that's a world champion to win. And so I'm curious, you know, what other kinds of things you guys are doing to get more people involved and young people started riding sure. bareback horses in Bronx and all that kind of stuff.
Well, we're always part of schools and stuff, but the biggest thing is just the awareness. We want people to show up and come walk through the tours, ask questions, meet the cowboys. You know, at every PRS event, after the event is over, every single cowboy signs autographs, every single guy. There's 36 guys at every event we go to. They will all be up on the veranda where the tickets are sold or where the doors, you know, open and close where everybody's leaving. And they'll stay for hours and sign autographs and meet the people. You don't get that at any other level at professional sport ever. You get to meet these guys one-on-one, some of the best athletes in our area in the world. And these guys, you know, these people get to come and hang out with them, meet them and just see the quality that I'm talking about. Being a true American, that hardworking discipline, that accountability, you know, that cowboy image that, you know, my word is my bond. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Yes, sir. No, sir. Type attitude. And that's what I want these people to see more than anything. And then if they get a chance to come and look at the livestock, thousands of dollars are put into breeding these animals. And on top of that, hauling them to and from these rodeos. And the really neat thing for me is to justify, you know, what the quality is that we're bringing, but also tell the people about, you know, what it takes to produce this animal and then how well this animal is treated, because that's a misconception throughout the country is that, you know, because these bucking horses buck and all this, that they're wild horses and that they're treated inhumanely, which is not true at all. These horses are treated like kings and queens, because without that animal, you cannot get a good score. If you don't get a good score, you don't make any money. So these cowboys, I mean, if a cowboy drew a horse, you know, like here, and it would help improve the quality, the feeding grain, you know, they'd bring their own bag of grain to make sure that they had, I mean, they brush them if they needed to before the rodeo. I mean, they'd do anything they could for this animal. But the fact of the matter is these horses, they only have to compete 9 times, and a lot of them 15 times for a full year. That's 15 times bucking total. The rest of the time, what do you think they're doing? They're out in the pasture. They're being horses, you know? They have a great life. You come to our event, they're fat. They got good hair. They're healthy. They love it. If I turn those horses out in the arena by themselves, they buck and they play and they go around. They love what they do. We don't force them to do it at all, you know? And that's neat for me to show the fans. And plus, on top of that, this has been a statement probably 10 times over some events we've had back east, and they say, oh, those poor animals. And I've given tickets to people when they said that. I said, here, I promise you, please come early. I want to show you the horses, show you the bulls. We'll go down and we'll do a little tour. And then when you get up in the stands, and I'll ask you after the event what you thought about the event. And 100% of them, when the event was over, said, poor cowboys. Oh my God, these are huge and they're ranking, you know, poor cowboys. So it is, and all it is educating the fans, educating the people. And we're so lucky that I would say 95% of people that have come to our show have been reoccurring fans. They've come back the next year. They follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our Facebook and Twitter, our social media interaction is like at a 1,000%, 850 to 1,000% on a regular basis. The PBR is at 45% fan interaction. That shows you the quality that we're bringing and how much we incorporate our event into the community. And that's important. We go to children's hospitals. We go to, you know, whatever person that is supporting the event, will be there with them. And, you know, we have a lot of truck dealerships that we go spend time with. But for us, it's the kids, you know, any type of school activity, any type of anything that we can do with these children, because I want to bring them around and show them what it is to be a true American, to work for what you want in this world. And, you know, once it's earned, you have that pride and that integrity within yourself. And that's something that we're lacking, but these cowboys have it. And the more I can show these young people, maybe we'll touch a couple of them, you know, God help us. The more we can touch, the better. And there is not a better role model in this world than a rodeo cowboy.
Well, you've been around rodeo a long time. What do you think has changed as far as how many people are getting involved in the sport, at least in like bareback riding and saddle bronc riding? I think bull riding has a pretty steady flow, but have you seen that slow down, or are there less people getting started now than when you first got into it?
Yeah, it's different because you go in your trends and everything, but the PBR, there's a lot of young men that are coming up that want to be bull riders. And the main reason is the money.
Right.
You can make a good living doing it. And so we've seen a little bit of lack in the numbers when it comes to bareback and bronc riding, you know, not to a point where it's a drastic lack, but it's, you know, it could be a lot better. But when you're not scored fairly and you're not able to make a good living going down the road, why would you want to pursue that event? I mean, it's tough on the body, and it takes a lot of heart and endurance and try and all those things. So what we're trying to do is we want to show what these events entail and the quality of person that's doing it. And then, you know, giving back to, you know, doing schools. I've been a part of so many schools throughout the year, and it's more than that. You know, going into a school and helping these young men out, you know, learning how to be bareback riders is great. But it's always a life lesson. You know, that's the biggest thing first, is learning what it is to be a man, learning that everything great in this world comes out of hard work and discipline. And that's something that us young men really need, you know, and I'm sure a lot of parents can attest to that, is without that discipline and that hard work ethic, they'd rather sit in the house and play video games and argue when you ask them to go take out the garbage. That's,
yeah,
you know, cowboy, you go ask him to take out the garbage, man, he'd jump up and take the garbage out without even any hesitation. And that's the way these young people need to be too. But we are building something with these young men and women. And I personally do as many motivational talks I can, because I've been up and down the road. I've been about where any of these young people have been, from any realm, when it comes to sports, to schools, to relationship, to no money, gut-wrenching experience. I mean, just about everything. So we've seen a number start to increase back into the bareback riding, with help of, you know, things like the American, where there's a lot of money added, things like that, that star, pack status. And when you see a guy jump in the bareback ride and win $1 million, then it, you know, becomes vital. You know that you can make that much money in a lifespan rodeo. And that's important. And, you know, for myself, I was $1 million winner. I've, you know, over my career with the PRCA, I made 1.2 or 1.4 million and really don't have much to show for it. And part of it was, you know, it cost me so much to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so up and down. And the whole goal was to make that national finals. Once you made the finals, you broke even. But I promise mm-hmm. you, in the horse events, riding events, you know, we'll say the top eight guys might have money in their bank account when they get to the finals. The guys underneath that are probably dead broke. And that's
wow.
sad.
You that know, is really sad. Wow. Well, what would you say to somebody who, you know, maybe doesn't have that Western background, didn't grow up in a ranch or in a rodeo family, and wants to get started riding bareback horses or saddle bronc horses? What advice would you have for somebody like that on how to get started?
How to get started, the first thing you've got to do is you got to get in contact with somebody like Barstow Pro Rodeo. You know, they do all the products and stuff. And you need to get on the web and find a school, you know, have, they can get on Pro Rough Stock, send me questions, and I can do anything I can to help those young men out. And we're right now we're working on response issues with our podcast and our media campaign, because we want to do rodeo schools. We want to incorporate that into the PRS. But we need the fans to jump out and say, hey, you know, we'd love to have a rodeo school. Where could we do one? You know, there's, you know, the numbers are all what it takes, because we want to make it beneficial. If we step out and do something, we'll do a world-class event for them. We just need to know that that's wanted, you know, so much feedback as we can, but send us questions. I will hook kids up with the very best schools in the world. I know exactly where they are because I've been part of them, you know, and you know, the very best schools in the world, you're probably going to have to pay for. You know, there's a lot of PRCs doing a lot of free rodeo schools, and those are great, but at the same time, when something's free, you don't put as much into it. And so I believe in that to a point. If a guy's, you know, just broke off his butt like I was and had a chance to go, then that's something. But that's a very rare exception when it comes to somebody really pursuing a lofty goal or a career off of something that starts from being free. And we always look at some, you know, in this country, I don't know why everything has to be free at first. And that's not, I'm just not built that way. I'd rather go pay a couple hundred bucks for a best school in the world and have the best bareback rider or bronc rider teaching me. So when I left there, I knew all the ins and outs of what to do correctly. And sometimes those free schools aren't that, but you know, being said, there's one that in Waller, Texas, that Clint Cannon does with his family, and Justin Sports Medicine is a big part of it. Barstow's a part of it. And the quality of that one is phenomenal. They'll have a ton of kids down there. You know, it'd be like 40 to 50 kids, but I've been a part of that one personally, and I think it's great. That's where Richie Champion came from. So that one's a really good starter. You know, so you look at it and you just decide, okay, where you want to go, how far you want to go. If you want to just kind of figure, see what it's about, I would go watch. I'd go to a live event. I'd, you know, get there, and then I'd ask some of the Cowboys some questions. You know, even if it's a mom that looks at her young boys, you know, he's an aggressive little fart and wants to ride everything around the house, the dog, the kitchen table, the counter, it doesn't matter, you know, bring him to an event, let him meet some of the Cowboys, and this is something that he wants to do, then start pursuing it. But the biggest thing for parents especially is this: make those children earn it. If they want a rodeo, make them pay for their own rodeo school with whatever they've got to do. Make them pay for their own equipment. If they want to go to events, make them get the money set up to pay for the rodeo fees and the travel expenses. Teach these young people how to be accountable, because if they're working for it, it's going to do two things. They're either going to blow the roof off and be very successful, or they're going to decide, you know what, it's too much. I just don't want to do it, which is okay because that keeps them safe too. If their heart's really not in it, then don't do it. It's too dangerous for that stuff. So I tell all these young people, go out and earn it, you know, work for it. You're going to feel, once you start being successful and riding and doing those things, it's going to mean something to you. And that's what our country was built off of, is that pride and that work ethic. You know, seriously, that's why America is so great, is these people stepped out of their box, didn't matter who you were, and made something great of themselves. Like Jim Braddock, you know, fighter comes through and, you know, in the Depression, and fights through odds and ends and ends up being a world champion because of that desire, that accountability, that work. He knew what he was fighting for. He's fighting to put food on the table. You know, that's what makes our country great. And I hope that these young people adhere to that, because it is important in life. If you love what you do, put everything you got into it, then it's worthwhile. If you don't, you always have reservations on you could have done better. You could have done more. And that's, you know, when you get my age and you wake up in the morning, that's not too great of a thing to think about.
No, that's true. And unfortunately, I think as we get away from sort of the more rural lifestyle and kids growing up on ranches and stuff, a lot of kids don't have that opportunity to really develop a strong work ethic. And it's a shame. You know, well, there's too many kids.
I disagree. I think that there's the ability. There's always something there to learn, that work ethic. I think a lot of our parents nowadays, we make mistakes and we don't put those children in positions to give them that work ethic. And it doesn't matter if they're cleaning house, taking out the garbage, mowing the lawn. You know, those kids should always have incentive to learn a work ethic, incentive for doing it, whether it's you want a pair of new tennis shoes to play sports, or you want this or want that. Well, make them earn it. Don't just give it to them. Make them earn it. And it doesn't matter if they're doing, you know, if they're getting straight A's in school, they're working for it. That's a work ethic. I don't care who you are. That's a work ethic. So, you know, make these children earn what they have. Don't just give them, you know, free stuff anymore. And that, you know, that is, I mean, it's work ethic is a big thing with me, and, but it's accountability. It's making, you know, like with having animals is wonderful because you have to be accountable, because those animals are depending on you to get up in the morning and go feed them, make sure they got water. So that's a good thing. So children that have plants or a dog or a cat, I mean, you see that, and a lot of children through school, you'll see the ones that are in trouble all the time. And you ask them, do you have a dog? No. Do you have a cat? No. Do you have a plant? No. They don't have anything to keep them accountable.
Right.
You know? So give them something, whatever it is, you know, and sure help out.
Yeah. I guess what I meant is that parents, you're right, parents have to take an active role in that.
Sure.
Because kids that grow up on a ranch, it's easy for them to learn that work ethic. They don't have a choice.
Yeah.
But when you're, you know, when you don't have to go out every morning and feed the cows or whatever, you have to create that environment more. And
you're right.
So
yeah.
So it's a better job of that.
Yeah. It just takes a little bit, you know, a little bit more of a thought process. And but I'm sure parents that, you know, I hope that some parents are listening thinking, oh yeah, you know, that's a good idea. And I can tell you, honestly, the reason I say that is because I went through that with my children myself. And you know, when I started winning money, I wanted to give my kids anything that I never had. And it caused a lot of problems, because I remember sitting my children down, they were going, my son was in high school and my daughter was about there. And I just said, hey, what are your goals in life? Like, what are your dreams, your aspirations? And they didn't have any. Wow. And I realized the reason was because I'd been giving them everything. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me in the heart pretty hard. So I just started turning things around. And my children are, I mean, my son has a great work ethic. He's one of the most dependable guys, you know, to work with and do anything. And then my daughter, she has just done monumental things with school and sports. And but she's the same way. You go to an event and she's the kid that picks everybody up and pushes them. And she's a very good athlete. She's, you know, we're going to a D1 college for track, and she broke the school record by 11 inches in triple jump last year. So it's not like she's a slouch by any but straight A's, you know, and just works hard. But part of it was, you know, making sure she was accountable, making sure he was accountable. It wasn't easy. I mean, there was times that we had fights. There's times that she was in sweeping the barn and cleaning stuff up, and I'd taken her cell phone away and the world ended, you know. But as parents, we've got to be aware that it's, you know, it's for their better good. And sometimes it's going to cause some conflict between the two of you. But, you know, just stick to your guns and go with it. And eventually it's going to pay off, because it's for those kids' best interest. It truly is. You can go to proroughstock.com, and that has everything from our live schedule to when the events are going to be in your town. It also has the television schedule with RFD TV. Like I say, that's every Wednesday night at 8:00 Mountain Time. And every Sunday at 1:30 Mountain Time. So some really good spots for us. But then also you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, which I love, because that's where I get all the questions. You know, a lot of people get on Facebook and send me questions. Hey, Kelly, what about, you know, this horse, or how do you pick horses here? What's the flank, or what's the do with the spurs? And the more those questions can be answered, the more involved our fans can be. And I like involvement, because for one, I want to educate the fans out there in what we're doing, because all it does is increase the quality of our show. You know, they come in, they understand what's going on, they're engaged and they're having fun and they love being a part of it. That's very important to me. On top of that, it brings them closer to the two things that I admire the most in this world, is those rodeo cowboys and those animal athletes. So get on that Facebook and send me some questions. I love it.
Yeah, awesome. And I think RFD also has an online viewing option as well. So if you don't have TV like me, you can still watch them on the internet.
Well, yeah, and they'll have it on the internet. And then also there'll be some clips and stuff on our ProRoughStock.com where you can get on and see some of the best rides and previews of shows and stuff. And yeah, I mean, there's nowadays it's just awesome. And then we also have our podcast. I think that's in conjunction with yours now called Masters of the Ride. And that's where I do a lot of the education. I do the pre-show build up, the post-show conclusion. And then I go over and any question that somebody asks me, we put it right on the podcast there and try to be as completely as informative and giving the fans exactly what they want. And then we've got cowboy stories on there, which are pretty great, you know, so some beginnings, you know, kind of like mine and stuff, and some that are pretty funny on how guys got started and later on in life. I mean, there's going to be more shows like that where we probably have two or three guys that are traveling together and doing some fun buildups, but it's just a great way that these podcasts are just a way, great way to get people engaged and involved in what we're doing in rodeo. And we want to be a part of every association, everything out there that improves the quality of these cowboys. And, you know, we just did an event in Louisville, Kentucky with a national FFA convention 2 weeks ago. And that was put on by the World's Toughest. And that was a separate association, which is almost a competitor of the PRS. Mm-hmm. But the way that we feel is, you know what? It's for the betterment of these cowboys. So we want to be a part of it with you. If there's a way that we can come in and film or be help out or something to improve the quality for these cowboys, then let's do it. And that's really what we've been doing. We just, you know, you put all pride, all that stuff aside, because our number one goal, our mission statement is to improve the quality of lives for those cowboys and the athlete, the animal athletes, people that are producing them. And so that was a big stepping stone for myself, because tell everybody that's what you'd adhere to, and now we're proving it. So
yeah,
got some really great things coming up for this next year, and I'm so excited to be a part of the PRS. And you know, I'd love for people to come and watch a live show, because they get to see firsthand not only the cowboys and the athletes, but the people that work with me are some of the most dear professional people that you'll ever see in the rodeo area. Even my TV crew are just amazing, humble people. And I've got Daryl Barron as my shoot boss. He's the best shoot boss in the world. He did the finals for years. He's the guy that real tall, looks like the Marlboro Cowboy, the big mustache, handsome guy, and he's got his pants tucked in his boots. He's always got fancy type cowboy boots on. You know, he's a world class act. So you know, there's a lot to the PRS from quality that I love people to see, because that's why I'm a part of it, you know? And I think that's why a lot of these cowboys are coming to the events and why we have so many fans involved now.
That's awesome. I have not been to an event yet, and now I really want
to.
Do you have any in Montana?
No, we don't yet. Our closest we were doing Chase Hawks for a while.
Oh, okay.
And loved being a part of that. And then we got a corporate sponsor that was a conflict, so we weren't able to come back. But if we get a chance, I would be back there in a heartbeat. I love that event. You know, if anybody out there is listening, go watch Chase Hawks. And it's like the 21st, 22nd of December.
Yeah, it's like right after the NFR.
All the proceeds go to a children's hospital. And I love that event. It's such a gut-wrenching event for me, because I have kids. And I couldn't imagine going through that time of year with my child being sick. And the more support that they get, the better. And if we can ever get back in, because we did film it a couple of years ago and it was on our show, but we just haven't been able to get back in there. But I love that association. I believe in everything that they do. And I've been a winner of Chase Hawks 3 years. I won it, not back to back, but I did win it 3 times. And it's just a first class rodeo. It really is, you know, a rough stock, because it doesn't have, it's just got barebacks, broncs, and bulls, just like what we do. So,
yeah, we need to work on that, Kelly.
Yeah.
So I just have one final question for you. And okay. I think I already know how you're going to answer it, but I'm going to ask you just this one last thing before we wrap up. And that is, what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
Oh, accountability. Absolutely. That's kind of my word, accountability. Because with accountability, you've got the work ethic. You've got the word is my bond. You've got the manners, everything that goes with it. Accountability is a big one, because the only reason we get anywhere in life is learning from our mistakes to bet, you know, we learn from those mistakes because they better our life in certain ways. And some of the biggest blessings I've ever had in this world have come through some big trials and tribulation and mistakes that I've made. And being accountable for them has built me up to be, you know, in myself, a pretty decent man, and, you know, to where I'm at right now, and for my family and who I'm working with. So that's accountability by far. It's very important.
I would agree. That's definitely a good quality for anybody to have. Well, thank you so much for being here today, Kelly. It was great talking with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Hope we can do it again. If you get any questions and somebody wants to know, call me. I'll throw a 10-minute speech on whatever we got to talk about, and I'd love to help out any way I can. You know, your fans out there, if they ever want to come to an event, just holler at us. You know, we're
yeah,
accessible. We're growing, and you know, this next year we're hoping to have quite a few tours. You know, this year we had about 17, and we're trying to double that for next year. So the more support we get, the more, hey, why don't you have an event here? We even incorporated barrel racing in Loveland because of fan response, and it's something, wow, I think we're going to be doing at a few of our events this next year. So it was just a great fit to, I really don't think it gets much more extreme than barrel racing. Really. And I've rode a few barrel horse. I've raised a few, and that's pretty wild. But on top of that, to exemplify the quality of those horses, those athletic animals, is, to me, they're probably the most athletic animal in the rodeo arena, because they got to run full blast, stop and turn, and just keep going. And that's so impressive. And the caliber and how fast they run is breathtaking, literally unbelievable. If you've ever rode one and have one come from home, it'll take the air out of you. It's just unreal how fast they are. And to be able to stop and turn like that. And I've rode, you know, team roping horses, calf roping horses, steer wrestling horses, and I've had a couple steer wrestling horses take my breath, but they didn't have to stop and turn.
You know? Just have to run as fast as they can in a straight line.
Yeah, but that's a great fit too. So we're going to definitely have some more barrel racings at some of our events this next year. So any of them gals that want to enter, look into the schedule, and we'd love to see you.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was a blast.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Kelly Timberman. There's a lot of good information in there just about rodeo in general and what kind of improvements are coming down the pike, and also how to get started in rodeo if you or maybe your son is interested in starting to ride bareback horses or saddle bronc horses. You know, Kelly gave a lot of good advice in there, so hopefully that will help you out. For more information on the PRS, you can also check out their podcast, which is called Masters of the Ride, and you can find that on professionalroughstock.com and also iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud, I believe. As always, you can also find links to those websites and other resources mentioned in the show notes for this episode at earnyourspurs.com/episode15. Don't forget to reach out to me. You can send me an email, alyssa@earnyourspurs.com. Find me on Facebook. Send me a tweet. I'd love to hear from you. I would love to know if you're going to be in Vegas for the NFR. And if you have any questions regarding cowboy culture or rodeo or getting started riding anything, you can go to earnyourspurs.com, click on the Cowboy Q&A tab, and leave me a voicemail. So make sure to do that. Thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate you, and we'll see you next week.
For listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.